Welcome to The Rot Focus, a podcast for rotters, newbies, and veterans, and everyone in between. We're hosted by M.A. Lee with the assistance of Remy Black and Edie Rooms, all from Rotters, Inc. Books. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Each episode lasts as long as it takes to fix a quick dinner, drive a short commute, or take a brisk walk. Resources and links are in the show notes. Visit us at therotfocus.blogspot.com. Now, on to this week's episode. Words per week. Wow. 140 titles published, novels, and short stories. Of that number, 100 of them sold over 1 million copies each. Translated into dozens of languages. Used pen names because he was so prolific he had to disguise his output from editors. Who is this great defeater of writer's block? Let's try one more clue. 271 TV episodes produced with his trademark character, Perry Mason. Have you guessed the writer? Earl Stanley Gardner. To write 66,000 words each week and to publish 140 titles, Gardner had to have methods and techniques to defeat writer's block. In his early days, before he became best-selling, Gardner had to learn storytelling techniques, all the craft skills of character, plot, conflict, and resolution, endings. He discovered practical methods and adapted others, and those served him well over his long career as a professional writer. Let's analyze the ones we can adapt to supercharge our own right focus. Before beginning, the source for this information is in the show notes. Rather than a link for the book, I've provided publication information, as this book is from a small press, and it may be difficult to find. I looked into a printed copy, then proceeded to underline and highlight all the way through. The nonfiction book is Secrets of the World's Best-Selling Writer, The Storytelling Techniques of Earl Stanley Gardner, by Frances and Roberta Fugate, published by Gray Malkin Media, copyright 1975. My edition was printed in 2015. The Fugates delved into the vast collection of Gardner's material, which is now located at the University of Texas. They've done the hard work. This book is basically a biography of Gardner's writing life. For the majority of that writing life, he dictated his stories from detailed notes. He used long-term secretaries who transcribed, as well as proofread, his notes. He started pursuing writing in the early 1920s, and by the mid-30s, he had what he called a fiction factory that kept five secretaries busy. In his earliest years, when he squeezed time out between his job and his research into storycraft, he typed his manuscripts before sending them off to short story publishers. When he settled into a law career, he knew the confines of a law practice and tried other jobs. He worked in the automobile accessories part in sales, but the business folded in 1921. That meant he had to return to law and the office routine. Writing was what he wanted because it disrupted that horrible office routine for him. He called it his salvation and pursued it in earnest from 1923 onward. He gave himself 5 years of all-out effort to see if he could succeed, and he did. That snippet of biography alone contains three techniques we should use in our own writing life because it helps us form the habit of defeating writer's block. First, Gardner committed himself to research storycraft, especially focusing on character and plot, and he jotted down any information he found pertinent. Early in the 1920s, he took a home correspondence course with this text, Writing the Photoplay, by J. Berg Eisenwein and Arthur Leeds. In it, he noted these paragraphs. To have the plot instinct is a great blessing for the writer. Lacking this, however, the most valuable asset he can possess is the notebook habit. Carry one with you constantly. Jot down everything that may be of help in framing and developing a plot, as well as in creating a dramatic scene for a story. The rule of jotting down your thought on the instant does not apply merely to ideas that come as inspirations, or thoughts suggested by what you read or see, but it applies especially to the ideas that come to you at the time you give yourself up to concentrated thinking on play production. Gardner took the notebook advice quite seriously. Any information that struck him, he copied into the notebook, as well as adding details about his writing life. On August 18, 1930, he wrote, "Decide to start book in earnest, wrestling with plot." Later, those details became notes such as this one from November 24, 1956, 26 years later. The murder should be an integral part of the story development, not just something dragged in for the story. In doing that, the childhood sweetheart idea may have become outmoded. However, let's play along with it for a while. As the Fugates note on page 18, during the 1920s, his accumulation of ideas was chaotic as he vacillated between using notebooks, index cards, and whatever happened to be in his pocket. During the 1930s, coincidentally with the employment of regular secretarial help, in particular Jean Bethel, who made Gardner's work her life, his records became more orderly. Gardner was not recording for posterity, as in the case with so many writers who grandiosely chronicle philosophical pontifications and self-consciously edit their notes. Learning to write or engaged in the even more serious business of writing, he did not know that future scholars would be pawing through his papers, and he cared less. Descriptions, mystery, plot ideas, character sketches, details of his own daily life that he could convert into character details, all of it went into his own notebook and became fodder for stories. These snippets of ideas and notes become ways to charge up our own writing minds when writer block strikes. Second, squeezing out time to write while continuing with his day job, the office routine that he so despised, Gardner considered writing his primary focus. He didn't waste that off time, but focused on learning about writing, applying those lessons, and turning out stories, which he sent to publishers, the pulp magazine editors at first, then the magazines with a bit more cachet, and finally the slicks, the higher-priced glossy magazines, as he became good at his writing craft. Those earliest editors, then later his agent, provided feedback which helped him improve his application of story craft knowledge. The need to learn continuously, either by taking writing courses that will stretch and practice our skills, or finding our weaknesses and learning how to improve them, whether we're weak on cliffhangers, or branding, or promotions, all through our writing life, we will learn even if it's only the research for the current story we're writing. Such learning can renew us, keeping our writing fresh and interesting, overcoming blocks and barriers by seeing with new eyes. Third, and most importantly, Gardner kept detailed story plans. He determined his protagonist and quickly learned that a serial character that readers and editors know is a selling point. In his detailed notes, he knew the antagonist and the situation, how the murder is committed and solved, as well as the major distracting red herring characters for a mystery. He knew such details as characters and conflicts for his thrillers and his westerns. He knew his setting and the descriptive tags that would evoke the setting for editors and readers, climate and location and more, plants and animals, and how they might help or hinder the protagonist. As part of those detailed notes, he had a rough idea of what I call the tagline, that brief attention grabber, which sometimes turns into the title. Garner wrote everything in his notebook, not only story details, but appointments and work ideas. The Few Gates quoted one such work idea. In constructing a story, block out the highlights, Garner noted, the emotional chords one wishes to touch, the rough outline of the color backgrounds of emotion, then fill in the details of the plot, make a skeleton and write, just as an artist works out the color tones and highlights of pictures. This simple little paragraph contains the two touchstones of any story. A, the protagonist or viewpoint character's emotions, which include opinions. Gardner adds that those are the color backgrounds of emotions. Key words. We're looking at the nuanced and subtle range of an emotion in a particular scene. We want the best word. Don't say anger when meaning rage or vindictiveness. The background to that emotion is the memory that sparked that emotion. Do not belabor the emotion, but since we need the emotional chords, we do not have several touches within a scene. Chords are three or five notes played together. Three to five touches within 1,800 words or an eight-page type scene might be a good range. B. Gardner also says to fill out the details of the plot for a short story formula with each movement about 1,500 words. We start with a surprising solution, then the next problem building to an ironic or unexpected event. For a novella or a novel, you're also looking at the major movements, 7 or 12 or however many movements in the story, which serve as keys. These are the events only, not the written scenes. Then we make a skeleton, the bare bones, and write. It's a sketch of the entire story, and like a sketch by an artist, it's the key lines and shades or tones for it. This becomes the rough shape of whatever we're writing. Then we go back to it and create a really good draft when we can slow down and think about the descriptive tags and more. I don't quite write in this order, working out the sketch throughout. I determine my overall situation, the conflict and key characters. Then I move from opening event to the climactic scene in a straight line, with any surprises or twists or ironies noted down as I go through. I always know where I want my characters to be for the closing scene. Then I add in with sticky notes those opinions and emotional tones. For a short story, I use lesser dense plot formula, and in writing the sketch or that first rough shape, I may pursue intriguing rabbit trails. This results in about 4,000 to 9,000 words. I go back then and create a draft. For novellas, I use the plot 7, which goes 25,000 to 33,000 words. For novels, I use the archetypal story pattern, which runs with me from 65,000 to 90,000 words. The draft always adds appreciably to the word count. The Right Focus has previously examined dense formula, the plot 7, and the ASP. Links to the first of each of these episodes will be in the show notes. For writers dreading the blank page, these two touchstones defeat writer's block. We may struggle to find the plot pattern and skeletal bones. We may be tempted to haul out a thesaurus to find words that give us the emotional chords for any scene. Remember, we need to have a strong background for our key characters. We need these events that create the emotional chords for a particular scene. These emotions and opinions related to the motivation for this character to continue through the trials and tribulations, the angst and heart wrenches of this story. An apathetic character will turn away at the first hint of hardship. Knowing the events, the bones of the story, gives us a singular track, the spine of the story, that our subconscious brain, our muse, starts working on needed scenes, those extra scenes that fill in, develop, and enrich. Disruptions and distractions can make us stumble at the first sentences and about 7 or 10 or 15 minutes in. But right through that, when we reach the free flow of story, we've reached our reward. In later years, 1940, which is some 10 to 15 years after he recorded these two major touchstones, Gardner revisited these touch points. He'd encountered more outside information about writing and had studied writers whose works he admired. All of this coalesced into what he called the case of a well-written story. The res gestae are the singular facts, like a lawyer's outline for a brief. He wrote these 5 points on a single index card, which he would prop. Let's see. Let me quote from the book on page 78. I'm all over the place in this, front and back and front and back, middle. So this takes us to page 78. He would post the single index card propped up in front of himself, quoting now, while he sat at his typewriter. He writes on that index card, "Work on every plot until you have 1. Unusual opening incident. 2. Complete character conflicts. 3. Some emotional appeal. 4. Some unusual slant of characters and situation. 5. All stock situations eliminated. Make a genuine reader suspense in which he doesn't know what will happen next and is surprised either by A. what does happen, or B. the way in which it happens." These 5 points create excellent guidance for any writer tackling a story of any length. 1, remember, unusual opening incident engages us and our readers immediately. 2, complete character conflicts keeps every scene active and the characters engaged with their individual goals and the conflicts for those goals. No useless scenes shove into the story. We might have a personal longing or satisfaction for a scene, but if it doesn't reveal a character's motivations and conflicts, if it doesn't advance the spine of the story, does it belong in the story? Nope. Gardner's 3, some emotional appeal, reminds us that we need sympathetic characters and that certain events can be guaranteed turnoffs for certain members of our audience. We have to calculate if those events are worth destroying audience connection, or should we need to find another event to replace it. Audience appeal is necessary. We need to know our audience niche. Events that do not appeal to a cozy mystery reader can be perfectly acceptable in a grim, dark science fiction. Gardner's 4, some unusual slant on characters and situations. These unusual slants must fit the logic of the story, or we break the reader's suspension of disbelief. Verisimilitude, the semblance of reality, is very important. Audiences may accept the explosion of the rules of natural laws and rules of the systems for governments and institutions of the story world for the current book, but they will not follow your writing into the next book, which you want to sell to them also. Unusual slants keep the audience curious. Don't offend their intelligence. The unusual also helps this book stand out from the massive crowd. I want to add here a note on artificial intelligence for writing, because many writers are turning to AI for unusual slants. Do you know how AI for writing was developed? Other novels, well known, were run into the AI computer, a process called scraping. This taught the AI to generate writing. Taught is the wrong word, I guess. Scraping offers a vast bank of text for the AI to fetch and present to a query. AI cannot create. It is not original. It's copying. Therefore, it's not offering the unusual, only the most common answers that fit a query. As it currently stands, the status quo of AI is the usual, the common, the average, mediocre. We can do the usual, the common, the average with our eyes shut. Do as Gardner advises. Look for the unusual, the rare, the creative, all from our own brains. Lastly, Gardner's 5, all stock situations eliminated. Avoid stock situations and stereotypes. This is a second time that Gardner emphasizes surprise of the reader. As he said, the reader doesn't know what will happen next and is either surprised by A, what does happen, or B, the way in which it happens. Surprises and twists are key to Lester Dent's plot formula for short stories. And here we see it again with Gardner, two of the best-selling writers of 100 years ago, still attracting readers today. These surprises and twists help us writers maintain interest in our own stories. And that's the single most effective way to defeat writer's block. We haven't finished with the techniques Gardner used to defeat writer's block. We'll continue in the next segment. Keep writing! The right focus turns its lens on every writer's secret monster, writer's block. We say the mantra writer's block doesn't exist, but something more than simple disruptions and distractions can interfere with our writing, creating insurmountable walls. The right focus in the series Defeat Writer's Block analyzes the three most common types of writer's block and offers solutions to overcome and defeat this monster looming over the writer's desk. The best solution, though, is Leo Tolstoy's mantra, no days without lines, nulla dies sine linea. Make that your own mantra. Information for this series comes from host M.A. Lee's guidebook, Think Like a Pro, a new advent for writers, showcasing 7 lessons to change your perspective from hobby writer to pro writer. See the show notes for links. Thanks for listening to The Right Focus, a podcast for writers at all levels, hosted by M.A. Lee from Writers Inc. Books, assisted by Remy Black and Edie Runes. Our focus is productivity, process, craft, and tools. Music is licensed through Audio Jungle, called Background Music Loop. Its creator is Alexander Polishchuk, known on Audio Jungle as Plastic 3. The music comes in different iterations. Show notes and resource links for this and other episodes can be found at therightfocus.blogspot.com. Write to us at linkbooks@aol.com when you have questions, comments, and speculations. We will try to answer you as quickly as possible. By the way, we will not mine your email address. That's rude. If you find value in our content, share with your writing friends or write a review. We're small beans here without the advertising budget of the big peeps, and you can make a difference. And whatever occurs, right on.